The following program has been pre-recorded.
This week on Belonging, we have Andy Ketch, a seminarian in the Diocese of Nashville.
I went to Europe for a summer to go study the Reformation with other classmates as a part of a trip. And we went to Mass there the very first day, at like a 6:30 a.m. Mass in Mainz Cathedral in the crypt. Thankfully, my professor knew that we shouldn't receive because we're not Catholic. We didn't receive, and growing up, I didn't care at all about communion. We did it, I think, once a quarter or something like that. We left the Mass, but I was extremely angry that I couldn't receive communion. And I don't really get like angry very much, but it was one of the angriest I've ever been in my life. And I had truly no reason why, like intellectually. I didn't know why I was so mad. So really, that actually, looking back on it, kicked off sort of my conversion.
Next.
Hello and welcome to Belonging on Nashville Catholic Radio, the show for young adults in the Diocese of Nashville. We're back once again. My name is Zach Jensen with Father Gervon, celebrating his anniversary to the priesthood today. And we have a seminarian with us today, Mr. Andy Ketch. Andy, thank you for being on the show.
You're very welcome. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing great. I guess, are you and Father spending the summer together? Is that what's happening now in your seminarian life?
Yeah, this is, I'm going into my third year total so far. And so this year, this summer, I'm doing my second summer assignment, and they put me with Father G, so out at St. Thomas.
So I have so many questions to ask, about your discernment process, and even briefly, where you're at St. Thomas. Can you explain what a summer assignment is in terms of the seminary?
You really shadow the priest. So during your time in seminary, a lot of it is very kind of intellectual formation, spiritual formation in seminary. But during the year, you get a little bit of time to do pastoral ministry, but it's really the summers when you're able to kind of go back out into the world and you get to see what it's really like to be a pastor out at a parish. The main objective is really just to shadow Father as much as I can, sit in on meetings, serve Mass, set up for Mass, talk to people, get to know them, be able to experience more what the ministerial side of the priesthood is.
Well, Father, this many years into it now, do you remember what it was like being in Andy's shoes? I guess you're doing summer assignments as well. And what is it like having in your parish?
Absolutely. It's interesting because, you know, my first assignment is a seminarian for the diocese. It was in the summer of 2011, and I was at Immaculate Conception, Clarksville. Up to today, I still talk to some of those people, you know, and I think that's the beautiful thing about this whole summer assignment is because people would be with, you know, accompany us, and everyone in their hour, I receive a card, I receive, you know, a, hey, praying for you, or whatever it is. But it's, you know, it's still today, I go back, you know, to Immaculate Conception, I see the people who, you know, we went to take communion for the sick, or we were together doing this or that. So it's a beautiful opportunity that we have to know parishes and to know what, you know, priesthood is about. Like Andy was saying, a lot of times, you know, you in the seminary and you do the studies and you do this and you do this, and then this is the opportunity to be with the people. And I think for me, it was always an opportunity to say, you know, of course, I was in the seminary in the Archdiocese of San Antonio. Yes, I was in ministry and I was with the people of God there. But then when I came back to Nashville, it was like, this is my people. This makes so much sense. So I always had that opportunity to say, okay, this is the people that I'm going to be serving. And, you know, here I am 9 years later.
Yeah, 9 years. Congratulations to you, Father. And Andy, if you could tell us about your faith life growing up. Were you born a Catholic? Were you a convert?
No, I'm not a cradle Catholic. I grew up, was born in Chicago, but then when we were five, we moved to Portland, Oregon. So I grew up outside of Portland, Oregon, in Gresham. It's interesting, really, Oregon, I think Southerners really can't even picture it because it's the least churched place per capita in the whole country. The Catholic Church is very, very small there, and I don't even think I knew any Catholics growing up. I knew some Protestants. I grew up in the sort of charismatic Pentecostal movement. But I have a very faithful family, grew up fairly devout, reading my Bible, try to pray. You know, my parents and my church stress private prayer, you know, and, you know, personal relationship with Christ and things like that. When I came to deciding college, I went to where my dad went, which is Wheaton College out in Chicago. And it's an evangelical school. Billy Graham went there. There's a lot of different kind of authors, especially in the evangelical sphere, that are out there. VeggieTales is from there, like things like that. I went to college, and I even going into college, I had a fairly good prayer life, you know, relative, I think, to probably people my age. I was really kind of trying to find out, you know, what is true Christianity, because I would, you know, read my Bible, and then I would disagree with people, and it's a great environment where you can really hash out these arguments. So long story short, I went to Europe for a summer to go study the Reformation with other classmates as a part of a trip. And we went to Mass there the very first day, at like a 6:30 a.m. Mass in Mainz Cathedral in the crypt. And thankfully, my professor knew that we shouldn't receive because we're not Catholic. And so we didn't receive. And growing up, I didn't care at all about communion. We did it, I think, once a quarter or something like that. We left the Mass, and it was the second time I had ever been to Mass, and I didn't really know what was going on, but I was extremely angry that I couldn't receive communion. And I don't really get like angry very much, but it was one of the angriest I've ever been in my life. And I had truly no reason why, like intellectually, I didn't know why I was so mad. And I was mad that the other kids weren't mad, you know? And so really that actually, looking back on it, kicked off, sort of my conversion. I started, you know, more intensely looking into the Catholic faith. So finally I converted. And then about 3 years later, I entered the seminary, three or four. I'm always kind of fuzzy, but yeah, really, you know, with my conversion or with my discernment for seminary then, you know, I didn't grow up wanting to be a pastor at all. I pretty much assumed I would get married. I didn't want to be a missionary, you know, but even in college, I had started learning about the Franciscans and St. Francis. He was the first Catholic saint I ever learned about. And so when I learned about him, I was like, oh, I want to be like him. But I realized that I would have to become Catholic. And I was like, oh, there's no way I'm doing that. Once I did convert, I was like, oh, no, now I actually have to put, you know, money where my mouth is. So I was looking into the Franciscans, other religious groups, visiting them, praying about it, reading, talking to friends, things like that. And ultimately decided against it. I didn't find a community that I really fit into. And I think there was just something that didn't quite gel. But at the point that I decided not to do that, I realized, you know, that I really looked up to a lot of these diocesan priests I knew, and I got to know them really well. They taught me how to serve Mass. I would serve every day, or, you know, as much as I could each week. And it was through having relationships with these priests and serving Mass, and really, like, I would just try to hang out in the sacristy as much as possible, you know, just to talk to them. And so it was really through that it finally, my priest was just like, you should just become diocesan. Like, what are you doing? Just do it. And so, you know, I basically took him at his word. And finally, the last thing that got me was we had a public novena to Our Lady of the Assumption for our patron feast. And it was there that I made my attention to know what my vocation was. And it was really within the first, I think it was the third day or third or fourth day, that just diocesan priests like kind of stuck out in big letters in my mind.
So I often wonder if there's a great fear of seminarians at all, or even before you decide to go to the seminary, thinking, really, God, you chose me? Or aren't there other men that are more capable of better doing homilies or giving, or doing, saying confessions? Well, you really want me to be a priest? But yeah, I don't know. Father, can you speak on this? How God wouldn't call you if he wasn't going to give you the grace to serve?
I just saw something on Facebook or whatever yesterday, like, you know, do everything that is, everything depend on you, and praise if everything depend on God. You know, for sure, God give us the gifts and the talents that we need. And of course, I mean, we can't just say, oh, God is going to give me whatever I need, therefore I'm not going to, you know, do anything. No, that's not it. We need to study. We need to do all that stuff. But like, bottom line, God give us the grace to do whatever is needed. You know, sometimes talking about homily, sometimes I finish a Mass and I said, this was the worst homily I ever done in my life, you know? And then it's just like, it was just poor. It's just like, whatever. And then somebody comes like, hey, Father, thank you so much. I really appreciate it because I need to hear that. I'm like, okay. And then sometimes, and then that's like a powerful, humble experience. And then sometimes you're like, this company is going to be fantastic. You know, like you spend like 10 hours working and you have all the connections and you have all that stuff. And then he's like, well, this is going to be amazing. And then nothing happened, you know? So God give us the grace. Yes. We need to prepare. We need to be ready for whatever. Yes. But I mean, bottom line, God give us the grace to do what we have to do. So that is on the rite of ordination. We always joke on the rehearsal for the ordination. It says, you know, the priest said, Most Reverend Father, Holy Mother Church asks for you to ordain these, our brothers, to the order of the diaconate or the priesthood. And then the bishop looked to the priest and said, do you know them to be worth? And it's also because like, no, they are not, but God make us worth. You know, God is the one who make us worth. So it's interesting because there was a time in the seminary that we were, the old deacon class was preaching and like preparing a retreat for the next deacon class. And that's exactly what I preach about. My talk was about, you know, do you know them to be worth? And if you really honest to yourself, no, we are not. We're not worth, we're not prepared, we know that stuff. But God make us work. God make us to prepare. You know, God make us through the work and everything that we do, yes. But God is the one who give us everything that we need.
In your third year now, Andy, what are your thoughts of the seminary? Not so much that you maybe even expected anything at all, but is it what you thought it would be? Or I don't know. How do you feel 3 years in? That's such a big spiritual direction question. How do you feel now? But What's it been like after 3 years? Are you still thinking you're a different person than you were 3 years ago as what you thought of the seminary?
You know, it's definitely changed. It's still sort of hard to even answer to a certain degree. I've definitely changed a lot over the last 3 years. My first year was a propedeutic year, and that is a new thing
What that means, I'm not sure.
So basically, it's sort of like a postulancy year that they would have in religious life, in which it's your first year, and it's you're more focused on prayer, spirituality, and sort of removing yourself out of the world. You know, if you were working, you know, some guys are, you know, in their 30s or even 40s. And actually, we have guys in the seminary that are in their 50s. So especially with men like that, but even if you're a teenager or your 20s, it's still there are certain things to be definitely benefited from. And so you sort of remove yourself out of the world and you stay at a parish or at a seminary and you really focus on entering into the prayer of the church, like the breviary and the mass. And you also get to experience, it's almost like a summer assignment in which you get to also see what it's like at a parish. And so I did that for my first year, and it's a new thing that dioceses and the whole world is actually doing now. Rome has asked that we do it. So my first year was propedeutic year, and then now I'm going to my second year of actual seminary. So the last year was my first year being at a seminary, doing classes. And I think in some ways, I sort of knew what to expect because I would ask seminaries a lot, like, what's it really like, you know, day in, day out? You know, what's the reality about it? And so I sort of got that a little bit. It's the experience. It's when you actually then experience it that it's as if you didn't know it, like the first thing about seminary. At Notre Dame, where I go in New Orleans, what I've found is that the structure there is very, very helpful for, I think, for being able to pursue holiness and for being able to discern a path to the priesthood, because something that I've, for me, spiritually and intellectually and kind of everything is the idea of like stability as being important for being able to do God's work. And I found that the stability of the seminary actually kind of helps you like clear your head from all the distractions of the world. And even if things like aren't going great with your family or there's problems with your friends, you know, things like that they still cause you to suffer, but you can also, the structure of the seminary, especially the prayer structure, really helps you to grow spiritually in that. It sort of feels like what I imagine it feels like to live in a monastery. It's It is, you know, every day is the same. You know, you have to show up to prayer. If you don't, you know, you get in trouble and they're not very happy. So, you know, and, but then you're taking classes on top of that as well. But
so it's amazing. You mentioned so many other seminarians around you and priests helping you with the discernment process. Cause I often hear just the never discern alone. Father, I'd like to ask you, Father Gervon, do you ever, maybe more at your time at University Catholic or even now at St. Thomas, do you ever kind of notice in the back of your eye, people trying to cyber discern too much, maybe like look online, oh, that'd be nice to do, but I don't really want to go on the retreat though, or I don't want to tell Father that I'm interested in it. Do you ever kind of have to give people a little encouragement to say, no, you really need to talk to a spiritual director or vocation director?
How about all the time?
Yeah, every day. Yeah, okay, that's the only option.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for men, especially for men, it's really hard to talk about how we are feeling and all that stuff. So, yeah, all the time. And I think that, you know, I think that, and we really said that many times here, is every man should think about it, you know, at least, you know, every Catholic male should think about it. It doesn't mean that you're going to go. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that you're thinking about and you open the possibility for what God wants you to be. And then, you know, from there, it's up to the Lord to decide where he's guiding you. But I think that it's really important for each one of us to, you know, to know that it is something there. And that is a possibility. And I think that's the beautiful thing about it. Are you open to at least the possibility?
Yeah, because in my own experience, I think when it came to diocese and priesthood, I was like, well, if God wants me diocese and priest, then basically he'll change my desire to become like a diocese and priest. Like I was always waiting for a feeling to come, like to make me then want to do it. And what I realized is, that there is a thing in which like we have to desire, you know, what we're going to pursue. But what I found was that when I actually became open, you know, not purely intellectually, but, you know, in my mind, like, oh, I actually am, if God really would want me to be a priest, I would do it. Once I made that move intellectually, I actually started thinking about it. Then the desire started coming, but I was always kind of like passively waiting, or there was a time where I was passively waiting for like God to like, you know, one, you know, extraordinarily move my heart to just all of a sudden want to be a Catholic priest, you know?
You know, it's interesting because I was just doing a marriage prep a couple of days ago, and this guy already have the marriage date and everything. And then he comes to me and said, Father, I just want to share something. I said, okay. And then he said, you know, I love my fiance and yeah, I'm going to get married, but I was in a retreat and I really, that idea of the priesthood came back to my mind. And
wow.
I actually told her and I was like, okay, where is this going? You know? And he said, but you know, it's fine. But I think it was like, well, it's better for you to have those questions now that you're not married yet. Then a day after your wedding is like, what did I do? You know? So it was interesting. I said, well, keep praying. We will, you know, you have about a year until your wedding. So, you know, we're going to figure that out as we go. But it was pretty interesting to see, you know, experience that, you know, God somehow talking to him. And, you know, it kind of almost like, hey, and we'll see how that goes. But, you know, it was kind of an interesting conversation that I have during marriage prep.
Well, interesting. Andy, I'd like to ask you as well. You mentioned growing up, I guess, more of a Protestant background. What did your family think of either your conversion or especially your deferment to the seminary? Were they supportive of you? Or what was that like?
For some people, it sounds surprising that they're very supportive. But they're really very supportive of my conversion and of my entrance into the seminary. It was the idea of becoming Franciscan that they were not so excited about because they realized that, you know, therefore I've probably see me once a year or something like that. And all my family members, including my grandparents who are more Baptist, you know, old fashioned Baptist, they even still to this day say like, you know, we think you're following God's will. He's obviously working in your life. And
Praise the Lord.
No, it's fantastic. And I thank God for that. It's you hear about guys in seminary where their parents are not supportive and it is their cross to bear, you know, and you pray for a conversion, you know, of hearts for the parents especially. But I'm very thankful I don't have to worry about that. I mean, they're and I'll say, like, for somebody as a convert, the interesting thing is that in a sense, like, forces them to start looking, at least finding out more about the Catholic faith, because they're like, well, I guess if my son's gonna be a Catholic priest, I should probably know what all this is about. And so it's interesting, they've become much more knowledgeable about the faith, and I think different family members, they have more, I would say, an attraction that's starting to sort of form. So we'll see what happens. But
yeah, well, if either of you could speak to the next steps that any young man would take that might be listening, or that just thinks about this often and doesn't know what to do next. I know the website is nashvocations.org, but if either of you could speak, what are the next steps any aged man would take when thinking, I think God might be calling me? Would they contact a vocations director, or would they find a retreat? What next steps would they take?
I think each person will operate differently, you know. So it was funny. So my St. Thomas Aquinas, my new parish, we started to put some blurbs of vocation blurbs every week on the bulletin since I got here. So it's like literally it's like two or three lines that connect the gospel of that week or one of the readings for that week, weekend to vocation. And we did that. And, you know, there's a guy in my parish that saw that and contact Father Luke Wiggenbush. That is the director. And, you know, and he's, sure enough, yesterday I was buying a cassock for him because he's joining the seminary coming August. You know, so we never know. But I think that don't be afraid to talk to a priest. You know, one of the things that I always tell them is like, I am not here, even when we actively discerning a vocation to the priesthood, my job is not be here to make you go to the seminary, or, you know, I would say I have no expectations. My expectation is to walk the walk with you, to do the path, you know, to walk the walk. And at the end, whatever God is leading you, because that's a personal decision, you will be able to make that decision. So I'm here accompanying you as somebody from outside that can see where you are and all that stuff and can help you, because I've been that path before. Both on myself and help many other guys take that path. So I would say, though, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to pray. Don't be afraid, you know, to have that personal encounter with Christ through the sacraments, to, you know, through the Eucharist. Start to altar serve. I mean, 85% of the guys who, I think we already talked about this. My vocation story starts when, you know, I was altar serving and I saw my image on the chalice and I heard that sweet voice that said, would be willing to do this for the rest of your life? And then my answer was like, I think I'll be happy to do this for the rest of my life. You know, so altar serve, get close to your priest and ask him to help you in this process. What is the next step? What is, you know, and for so many guys, the next step is, you know, joining a vocational meeting group. It's, you know, do spiritual direction and all that. So it would depends from person to person. But, you know, talk to your priest, because the priest is going to help you with that. And if you have any problem with your priest, if he's lazy or whatever, let me know. I will beat him up and he will talk to you.
So, yeah, I definitely serve Mass. That was also a huge part of my that I left out. But it's a huge part of also my vocation. And then also, you know, don't be afraid to look into the breviary, like get Liturgy of the Hours or like the Little Office of the Blessed Virgin Mary or one of these older breviaries. Something, you know, and start kind of seeing like what it's like to pray liturgically, you know, throughout the day, something like that. I think that would also be helpful.
Well, Andy, thank you for being on the show today and best of luck to you. You're just serving the seminary.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
And hope any young men listening today might have found some guidance to hear a story that they may be going through as well. Remember, you can go to nashvocations.org or like Father said, just talk to your parish priest. Reach out to our vocations director here in the Diocese of Nashville. Remember, you can find our show wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on 100.5 FM. My name is Zach Jansen with Father Javon, and thank you for listening to Belonging on Nashville Catholic Radio.
Do you or your fellow parishioners have successful ministries and programs that work? Wouldn't it be great to share that success with another parish? Let us open the door for you to share what your parish does and to learn what other parishes offer their members. It's called Around the Diocese. You can hear it every Monday morning at 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. in the afternoon, Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 2, only on the Nashville Catholic Radio app, streaming at nashvillecr.com or tuning to 100.5 FM.
Need has no boundaries. It impacts one out of every eight families in our community. These are real people and children from all walks of life. The St. Vincent de Paul Conference in Franklin assists these families through various means. And one of the ways we raise money is St. Vincent de Paul's fifth annual Friends of the Poor Walk and Run. The funds raised allow them to assist families in need with utility, rent, medical payments, and more. They also operate a food pantry to help the hungry. The Walk and Run is Saturday, August 19th. Please join the conference and your neighbors in a walk or run to help those in need. To register for the event or donate, go to stmatthewtn.org/church. stmatthewtn.org/church.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You could say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You could ask with an app if it works for you. You could chat on a game, kick off your flip-flops. You could ask on your couch while you binge watch.
Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.